It's the Second Cup of Joe and John with Joe Elvis and John Dwyer.
Joe!
John, I know the answer, but you like burned candles? And maybe in the house, in the office,
it
I know
may have
the answer.
Been an epic fail. I do. I like the mood, but
yeah,
I got
I
this
too.
Gift. Somebody, I don't know, in some goodie bag or something. I got a Goo Goo cluster candle that I burned here about 45 minutes ago. I'm a little nauseous. I'm not going to lie. I'm not sure it works.
It's
for
good.
Me.
It's burning now. We'll ask our guest if he thinks it smells like Goo Goo cluster, but I like burning candles. Do you have a special scent? Like, I go for the sea breeze or generally the white candles. I don't like the red. It burns my eyes. You know, the whole room feels like cinnamon.
I think you're weird and you think way too much about this.
So quick story was in my 105.9 The Rock days, I interviewed Dennis DeYoung, the singer from Styx. And so in the studio, I always burned a candle, mild candle.
I remember that, going in there and going, oh, he set the mood.
There he is. Yeah, okay. I just liked it. And so he walks in his orchestrated brilliance, big pompadour, Mozart hair, and his scarf and his blazer on. It was a blazer. And walks around and looks at the candles and goes, put that out. I can't sing.
Typical rock and roll guy.
Kinda, I can't sing.
And I want my sandwiches without the bread crust on it. Where are the green M&Ms? He just pulled like a rock star thing.
Put that out.
Dennis DeYoung did?
Dennis DeYoung.
Who's the other guy who we really like, though? Who's also with him? Tommy Shaw.
Oh, terrific.
He's a cool guy.
Nashville guy.
He's a really cool guy. By the way, our guest is things you don't know about somebody you think you know. Mm-hmm. Big time rock and roll kind of musician guy, and he's dying to talk because he's
shut up.
He's a big shut up, man.
It's all about the music, John.
All right, you ready to go? You ready to do this? See what we got.
Hey, we know people.
Let's take a spin through Joe and John's Rolodex.
Joe, it stops on N as in Davis Nolan.
The Davis Nolan.
Been on Nashville Airwaves, WKRN, Channel 2, since 1936. He was the original guy who signed on. Davis, good to see you. Thanks for being on the Second Cup of Joe.
And John. Now watch this. There, he turned you up. Go ahead.
And John.
Now you
like
can
that.
Talk.
So you're part of this too, John, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what's funny, Davis, is you've never been in a bad mood since I've known you.
Yes.
You have a gift of gab. And
yes.
So, and I know you have we kind of have a hard out with you getting aren't we all getting PT now?
I think
physical therapy. So anyway, thanks for being here, partner.
Glad to be here. Yeah, I really appreciate you guys inviting me.
What's your Dennis DeYoung or your Styx story?
Well,
just
I think it might have been when Dennis DeYoung was here. Wasn't he promoting a play that he'd written a play or something like that?
He was, and he had a solo album out that mm-hmm. was just fantastic. His voice is as strong, if not stronger, as it was from, you know, the old Equinox days, the Come mm-hmm. Sail Away days. That is correct.
He had come into our studio to do an interview for one of our shows about the play that he was, because I guess it was appearing in Nashville. And I remember I said, I reminded him, because I happen to know about a lot of history, because I knew some friends of mine that were talking with Wooden Nickel Records, which was what Styx was originally on.
Okay.
And when I said that, he looked at me like, wow, how'd you know that?
Because,
you know, that was like in the very beginning. But I knew some friends of mine when I was growing up in New Orleans that were also talking to Wooden Nickel Records, but they never got on it. So,
well, I think it was Dr. Roboto, or it was an awful musical.
Mr. Roboto,
right?
that was later in the career.
Good, okay.
That's really what the album that split them up.
Because it was the other band members hated it.
Well, Tommy Shaw, this is just my opinion, okay?
Sure.
He just came along and overshadowed everything, you know, don't you think?
You
were following it more than me.
Well, no, they were very much kind of a Lennon McCartney duo of Tommy Shaw could do it all, but Dennis DeYoung could do it all.
Yeah.
And then you had two egos like that, but that Mr. Roboto album was kind of odd.
It was just
it was the 80s where everything kind of turned a little odd, and that was the end. And Tommy Shaw was on our show several times on 105.9 The Rock. And another side story was he met his wife here at the Starwood Amphitheater when Styx was over, and he was playing with Damn Yankees.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's a gal from Clarksville.
Okay.
Has a hair salon. and they hit it off on that night, and they've been married for probably 30 years. And
they
have
still live
kids.
Here in Nashville.
Yeah.
Tommy does, right?
Yeah.
Tommy lives here.
Sure.
Yeah.
A long time ago, I did see him opening for Rush, I believe it was, at Old Municipal Auditorium.
Oh, my goodness. You
know? Municipal Auditorium.
Let's get into, get into weather and all that, but I love the fact, let's get to it right now, that you have a musical background. You grew up in a New Orleans area, right. I believe, and you... I didn't know this about you. I came to Nashville in 1996. You had been there, I don't know, 10, 15. When did you come here?
81. November of 81.
Okay, so Bob in 79, you in 81. But you have a musical. I mean, you're not just a guy that fiddles around. You're an accomplished. We have a song of yours. Matter
well,
of
you can play it if you want, but I did.
That's okay.
You don't have to do that. I did play music when I was younger, and I'm sort of passed that on to my daughter now. She's quite accomplished singer. And I moved here in 81, and of course I didn't have any background in country, you know, so I grew up with rock, and I really got into the British progressive rock scene from Yes and Genesis and Jethro Tull and eventually Rush, which is Canadian, I know. But anyway.
I laugh because I see you. You just don't. I don't think of you as. I don't think anybody watches Davis Nolan on weather and think that this is part of your lineage. It's very
all,
cool, man.
Well, perception.
And it's sort of in the past now because I really haven't done this in, you know, 15 years or more. And but I moved here. And at first I tried. I had some friends of mine who wrote lyrics that didn't play any instruments, and I tried to put it to music and made it country, you know, and I had one or two little single songs and writing contracts with a publishing company or two here and there, but nothing ever became any of that stuff. But I started trying to write some of the rock stuff I did. Now I'm not as accomplished as the guys in Yes and Genesis and Rush, so I'm nowhere near that caliber of musician, but there was a little bit of an influence from that stuff, and it was sort of a hard rock, semi-hard rock thing there. And so I did about, I don't know, 10, 12, 14 songs. They're on YouTube. If you look under Davis Nolan, I believe it's under Davis Nolan Music, and you'll find it on YouTube. But it's a thing of the past now, because most of that stuff was recorded in the 80s, maybe early 90s at the latest.
It is on YouTube. It's Davis Nolan Music. And as they said in Spinal Tap, they're playing a bit of your past.
Exactly.
On the radio. Here is Davis Nolan, and the song is called First Stone on the Second Cup of Joe. And John. You see the lightning and feel the thunder. Davis Nolan on the Second Cup. And Davis, you were correct. You hear the Yes, you hear the Genesis, the progressive, like bands like Asia that would come out from that era. Do you feel you were a little bit ahead of your time? Because that was, you know, that was MTV era. Mm-hmm. That was radio was just starting to play the Genesises of the world. They were the Motley Crues, the Bon Jovis, the rock, arena rock. Did you feel you were a little ahead of your time a bit?
Not really, because, you know, I'd listened to all those groups, you know, growing up. Uh-huh. Now, maybe being here in Nashville, I was.
You were.
Now, I know one thing is that
I was late, yeah.
I had a hard time as far as getting anybody to take it seriously was concerned, because of I'm the weatherman on TV, right? So it was just all a big running joke. He's the weatherman on TV. The singing weatherman, blah, 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 you know. So most of the time, you know, as far as getting somebody to take me seriously, there would be small occasions where someone would hear the music without knowing who did it. And then they would, wow, I like that. But if they knew who it was before they heard the music, it was like the singing weatherman, ha, 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 you know, that kind of thing.
Sure. I think people will say it after hearing that little bit there, like, wow. You know, they're not familiar. And again, it's Davis Nolan's
30 years too late.
I know.
that boat is sailed, dog.
I live that life too. Yeah, I believe we have. It's okay. Davis Nolan, the music on YouTube. And you mentioned your daughter, Amanda. Mm-hmm. Lift her up. She's also on there. You can find her and talk about her musical career. Yeah,
well, she calls herself Amandum, D-U-M-B. I don't know why she does it, but she has a sense of humor, thank God. Uh-huh. And
hey, all right.
What she started out doing was a lot of a cappella stuff. She would sing like 8-part harmony and just do the whole song of, you know, usually a cover song of a song, and just do all the parts with her vocals and no instrument. And I thought that was great because she would edit it with like 8 different faces, each one singing all the different parts and all that stuff. And she still does do that, but it takes her hours to record each track and then edit all the stuff together. And then she ended up with over 500,000 followers on a TikTok. Now I think it's 600,000, 700,000, somewhere in there. I don't know. I don't have TikTok on my phone. And nothing against it. I just I have enough social media to worry about with weather. So
that's right.
We don't need one more. And she puts it all on YouTube, so I just watch it there, you know.
Good.
Common sense would tell you not to look to Joe and John for this, but time for life lessons from Joe and John.
So let's get into it. What got you here? What's your 30-second backstory?
I'll give you.
You can't do anything in 30 seconds.
Well, no, you can't. But I'll give you the bottom line is that there were two things in my life that I really loved. I loved meteorology, and I got a Bachelor of Science in meteorology, and I've worked in that field for 42 years, and I take it extremely seriously, especially severe weather. Now, I happen to love music, too. And, they were two totally separate things, but I was extremely serious, and I feel quite educated about both of them. And luckily, God let me do one of them for a living. So that's the way I look at it. Now, had something come out of the music, I might have tried that for a while. But this is as Billy Preston said it, that's the way God planned it.
Sure. Sure. And you're a kid born in New Orleans. You went to Tulane.
Yes.
And also finished up with your weather at Florida State.
Correct.
And did you have, we're all generally the same age-ish. We grew up listening to AM radio in our bed at night when our parents went to bed. So there is that kind of romance for broadcasting when you started in 81. You know, before internet, it's hard to explain, like to my 20-year-old sons, before internet, if you were on TV, the radio, or newspaper even, you made a great live. I mean, you know, that was a great living. That's where people got their source. Mm-hmm. And so your first job, I believe, was in Tallahassee.
Yes.
Yeah. And then you came to Nashville. So just talk about that era in your life. The equipment was obviously way different.
Yes.
Back then. And 42 years. No one does that anymore. And it's probably, what, 43? I've got bad math.
42 years here in Nashville. I started in 77 in Tallahassee at WCTV, which is the CBS affiliate. And, you know, you're talking about the old days. Our station, videotape had just come along. Most stations had been using film, and our station hadn't gone to videotape yet. And although the big stations, big markets had, it was right when I got in 77, the new videotape had just come along. And so up until videotape came along, you didn't send a tape, and nowadays you send a link. No, the only way they got to see you is if they brought you in and auditioned you. And the CBS affiliate in Tallahassee, WCTV, there was no other TV station on the air in Tallahassee at that time. So the weekend guy, or not weekend, there was no weekend weather. The main guy, they were wanting to start a weekend weathercast. So the main guy came to our meteorology department and said, we're willing to audition you guys. And I guess because I've been on stage in front of lots of people, the showbiz thing, the ham part that we all have to have, came out. So I said, yeah, I want to try that. Because I grew up in New Orleans watching a guy named Nash Roberts, who anybody from New Orleans that may be listening to your show, if they're old enough, or even if they're not, they know that name. He was the first meteorologist on the air in New Orleans and was a true meteorologist. And so anyway, I went out and auditioned for it amongst all kinds of other guys and girls and even people from the drama department, and they gave me the job. So I started the weekend weather in Tallahassee. We didn't have weekend weather until then. and I was being paid like $15 a show, but I would have paid them $15 a show I'm working on my meteorology degree, and here I am already getting experience. And by the time I'm graduating, I got a 3/4-inch videotape in my hand and a degree in the other. So I was very lucky.
That doesn't, just for people in context, you don't have just two call letters on a resume. I mean, for you to get the job in Tally, now that's not Dothan, Alabama.
Yeah.
That's not Helena, Montana. That's not Point Barrow, Alaska. You started at a state capital, and then you go to Nashville.
Well, I did have one stop in Tampa, but it wasn't very long. It was about a year and a half.
Oh, it was just Tampa. That's it. Yeah, no biggie. Well, Davis, what's the key to longevity? You have done it all. You continue to go out and add to your credibility with reporting, and you enjoy that kind of a bend to your career as well, as opposed to just doing a newscast. I got to believe technology has been, it has changed so much. Mm-hmm. Is it really, are you guys really that accurate? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Meteorology here is tough. Okay. I mean, nobody's ever going to be right all the time. And, I've watched the technology just evolve tremendously. Right. And as far as forecasting sensor, and there's two things to me in meteorology and TV weather, especially, there's the forecasting of trying to do 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 days. Then there's the now casting of severe weather, which you got to see, John, you were at the station when all this was brand new. We were the first to have that Barron's storm tracker. Barron's is the name of the company that makes it out of Huntsville, Alabama. John was there. We interrupted
Storm Tracker 2000.
And he interrupted many a sports extra for poor John after he'd done all that work on Sunday night.
Son of a.
Yeah. Lisa Patton and I were and he's just sitting there, when's this going to end so I can get on the air? And we felt so bad, but
no, you didn't.
He understood.
Did I?
But you asked about the longevity, and I think you'll understand this because you were there and saw what I went through at Channel 2 and things with different managements changing and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm there for 42 years is not because I'm good. It's because when a new management came in, they would want to, if they wanted to screw me around, I'd say, I'll do weekends. Oh, really? They think you're going to go, screw you. I'm leaving and going. I'm going to go somewhere else and be a big shot. And I just say, no, I'm happy here. I'll do weekends for you. I'll do the weekend morning show for you. And so, okay, he's not going to tell us to go somewhere.
Attitude was fantastic.
It still is.
If you want to stay in the market, you got to go with the flow, And
does that bother you that you maybe didn't sit in the left seat or what you would consider the chief job?
Well, I did twice. I moved here in 81. I was the chief meteorologist. The day I moved here in 1981, the general manager that hired me was fired. And 3 weeks later, the news director was fired, or at least about a month later.
Sure.
So everybody and I'm 20-something years old, and everybody's like, whoa, that just means a new management's going to come in. They're going to clean house, which they did back in those days because we were the number 3 station and low in the totem pole. So everybody that came in said, well, I'm going to change it, and I'm going to bring my people in. Sounds like an NFL team, I know. But anyway, and we're going to change it, and we'll make them number 1. So sure enough, that's what happened. And I agreed to do weekends. Oh, here they thought I'd just move on. So I did. And that continued. And then in 1988, a new news director came in, and he liked what I did. He made me chief meteorologist again. I did that for over almost another decade. And then another management came in, and I did the same thing. I'll do weekends. Oh, okay. And Lisa Patton and I were like brother and sister. We still are. And so, that was like, I considered her and I equal when I was the chief meteorologist. So when she became the chief meteorologist, it was fine with me, So, and I think that was the best teaming, especially in that early era of this storm tracking thing coming in, we kicked butt.
Yeah, you did. You were the best. You have Davis, the AMS seal, which is the top seal since 1979. And you've recently gotten your certified consulting meteorologist, which is a very senior position.
Right.
Talk about for weather, what that means. And that usually means a lot of folks, like, you'll bail here and go work for DuPont and do their agricultural forecasting. Yeah, what is that like in your future?
It can involve lots of different aspects. Nowadays, what seems to have taken over for certified consulting meteorologists is legal stuff. Okay, there'll be a building damaged, and the building was supposed to withstand 90-mile-an-hour winds, and if the winds were only 75, well, then this insurance company pays. But if it was 100, then this insurance company pays. And they want you to do forensic meteorology to help them you know, solve which insurance company pays. And excuse me. And back in God, when I moved here in the early 80s, I had a call from an insurance from a legal company, and it was just it was a house damage. It wasn't a big case, but and so that happened back then. And so ultimately, I was getting thrown into some of these things, and I didn't pursue it. About every year or two, some attorney would call me and say, "Well, the National Weather Service gave us your name because see, the Weather Service can't testify in these civil cases." They're government employees. They can get subpoenaed into a criminal case, you know, if there's something to do with a criminal case that the weather was involved. But if it's a lawsuit with one insurance company suing the other one, you know, then they can't be involved with that stuff. So they, since I had a degree in meteorology and I was one of the few people in Nashville that had a degree in meteorology, they'd say, well, you can call Davis Nolan, he can do it. So I just kept doing that. And then, of course, the AMS had this certified consulting meteorology program. And I sort of figured, well, you know, I'd like to have that designation, because if I'm in a court of law, I want to have all the, what do you want to call it?
Facts.
Gotta, yeah. Well, not just facts, but
gravitas, well, the credibility.
Credibility, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like have a degree, but then to have this being certified sure. at this particular job by the American Meteorological Society, as opposed to the AMS seal of approval that's on TV. That certifies you to be on TV and tell people about the weather. The certified consulting meteorologist is not just the courtroom, but, you know, private business. And they make you jump through a lot of hoops. You have to, as I probably explained on the website, you have to, first of all, you have to write a scientific paper, come up with a topic and write something for them and then try to write it. But they tell you to write it to where a client's reading it. And they're not a scientist. So I did that on the new dual pole radar and the debris detection, which has been around 10 years now or longer. So no big deal. But back then it was new. So I got in on that. Then you had to get interviewed and all this sort of stuff.
You're losing me. But you're a doctor, I think, right? Aren't you?
You're a doctor, yeah. Rapid.
Doctor.
Rapid fire. Pew, pew. Rapid fire.
Joe, my head hurts. Listening to all that, listen, like, wow.
After this section, after questions, we're going to go into a weather section. And if you want, that might be the time you go get a drink, because as Davis will light
margarita?
Up, Davis will light up the room with his outstanding knowledge. You'd be over there looking in the mirror, checking your hair, waiting to get on the set.
So,
all right, you're up first.
What is in your CD? Do you have a CD player, or what music do you listen to now? You got anything? Or are you stuck on classics?
I'm still stuck on the guys that and girls that I grew up listening
Why
to.
Why is that? We are too, kind
of. Yeah. Well, I just, you know, I love a lot of that music. And, you know, I have to be quite honest with you. When I'm in the car, I listen to sports talk radio because, you know, I'm a big Titans fan. I'm wearing my.
Okay, you are.
Amy Adams-Strunk gave me my.
Who's 99?
Oh, yeah. Oh. You've got it. He's sporting a Titans jersey. It says founder on it.
Right, because I was a founding season ticket holder.
Of the NFL in 1920.
Yeah, well.
No, I'm just kidding.
1999. I'm on the wall, too.
Right.
You going to buy in the new stadium?
If I can afford it.
I don't want to afford it. It's stupid. Anyway, it's a whole nother show itself.
I doubt I'm going to be able to afford it.
It's just ridiculous.
Yes, so what do you listen to?
Yeah, give it up.
I still listen to my favorites. You know, matter of fact, the other day, somebody I hadn't listened to in a long time was the Moody Blues. Yep.
Oh, the best.
And so I pulled them up in the car because there was nothing. It was nighttime. There was nothing sportsy on the radio except national sports, and I don't care about national sports. And so I pulled up that, and I listened to a bunch of old Moody Blues stuff that I hadn't heard since, like, back in the 70s, you know, it was really good.
You talk about you do morning television, which is pain in itself. What is your morning routine like?
Well, I'm not doing it right now, but I have done it.
Yeah.
When I went through a cancer thing about 10 years ago, when I came back from that, out of that, they were just starting our weekend morning show. And I did that for like 7 years. And it was fun, but quite honest with you, as you know, from being in radio, it's hell.
Well, that's what John's life was like for a long time.
I got beat up, man. I got beat up.
Well, that's right. I forgot you did that. Well, I'm so sorry.
So did everybody else. Trust, no. That's why I didn't do it anymore.
Well, I just think of you as sports so yeah, much that I forgot you did that.
And Davenport
did it too.
Yeah, John did the anchor, and I asked him, I think when he was on my show, I said, what's it like to do morning TV? And he said, I've missed 6 Super Bowls.
You missed Super Bowls. You're jet lagged 24. Anyway, yeah, look, you get paid well, so I'm not going to, you know, but to be in a coat and tie at 4 a.m. and not complain about how tired you are. So, yeah, I mean, you're an iron horse for doing that. How about dead or alive dinner guests that you would like to have? It can be one person, it can be three people, anybody in the world. Jesus is usually a popular one.
Well, but that would be cool, but you know, I want to mention a few sports guys because I can tell you the bands that I told you about. Yes, Genesis, Jethro Tull. I'd love to have all of them, but in sports, I've always been a Vanderbilt fan, but I wasn't into Vanderbilt baseball. But Coach Corbin is, you know, John. I mean, he's like nobody else.
The best.
The best. And it's not just the best baseball coach, just the best person in the world. And I've only met him one time when you had him for Sports Extra years ago. I mean, I remember Ben Troop and him were there. That's the only time I ever met him. But just reading him, I'm amazed I remember these things.
That's great. Deep, that is a deep cut, yeah. Tight Titans.
Ben Troop from the Titans.
Titans, right. Yeah. Tight end from Florida.
But just reading about him back in the Tennessee and, you know, what he went through when his, you know, daughter-in-law, you know, Maggie's, one of her two daughters went through the problem with the surgery at Vanderbilt and almost died, you know, and the stories and just the stories about, and listening to him talk about his kids. And I just really, really, really admired him. Mm-hmm. And another one's Coach Mack, because I listen to Coach, I just love Coach Mack.
Yep.
Let's see, a third one. Boy.
You don't have to. I'm curious who you might want to.
There's thousands of players, you know, but I'm trying to think of people that aren't players. I guess throw Coach Fisher in there because he and Coach Mack would be a riot to listen to them two talk together.
I would think Archie Manning being a New Orleans guy and a Saints quarterback and something like that.
Archie,
Tom Dempsey kicked.
I wasn't actually in the stadium when it happened. And I did go to a lot of Saints games, an old Tulane stadium. That's where we went to for games. My poor father. We didn't have – he wasn't poor. What I'm saying is my poor father had to drive me to Tulane Stadium in the traffic, okay, because his friends had season tickets. And if they weren't going to go, they knew that Davis wanted to go. So I'd get up and I would literally – because our grandfather, if we didn't go to Mass, he kicked our butts, okay? So I'd get up and take the bus and go to like 7:30, 8 o'clock Mass because my father usually went at 11. And I'd get home in time to where if that phone rang, I can go to the Saints game. And I was there with Billy Kilmer at quarterback, Danny Abramowitz as a receiver. You know, I wasn't there in the stadium when Tom Dempsey kicked the field goal, but I certainly know all about it.
Tom Dempsey was unique. I grew up watching him play with the Eagles after that, and he had half a foot. He had a plate on the front of his foot, which seems like it should be illegal.
We have to realize most of our listeners probably weren't alive when all this happened.
A 64-yard field goal, the longest in the NFL, Alex Karras. Of the Lions almost blocked it.
Wow. And he kicked straight on. None of the soccer kicking. That was, and we've lost everyone that's under 70 years of age. Davis, a question everyone gets. What advice would you give your 18-year-old self now?
Ooh. You mean in growing up now or growing up back then?
Back, you know, now look back and at 18 you'd say, you know, I should, boom.
I wish I knew that then.
Some of the things I shouldn't say.
Right. Well, we all got that.
You know, there's things like, boy, I could have been evil if I'd have known that back then.
Oh, yeah. No, maybe a career path or.
This got dark.
You've always been around weather. Maybe you wouldn't have taken that job in Tallahassee. You would have tried to fish for something out west or maybe you wanted to go up north. Was there always a pocket?
Well, I guess I just got to say. You know, it's the same thing that a lot of people say, go with what you love. But, you know, you got to you give a little bit of meaning to that because just because you love it, like if I wanted to say I want to be like an NFL football player, you know, I don't care how hard I tried. I wouldn't have been an NFL football player. Okay. Sure. So just because I love that and I want to do it and I'll try hard doesn't mean you're going to get it. You got to have the capabilities to do it. And most things in life aren't like an athletic thing. That's a natural ability. But when it comes to a career, that could be lots of things. And I just say you got to gain all the knowledge you can about this subject and be nothing to where anybody asks you a question about it, you don't know the answer.
Excellent. And final question. Give me your best John Dwyer moment on the set at News 2. I know he's a shoe thrower. Did he throw his pen at anyone? Did you see him scream at someone?
I had an edge.
Yeah.
I did. I had an edge. I didn't. If you cut me from – well,
I had an edge.
You know what? You asked him, but I've got my
– Go ahead, John.
I think I already said it just watching him sit over in the sidelines with Lisa Pat and I, because we were all in the same studio, and he's sitting over there on the set waiting to go on.
Did he ever
when we're doing tornado warnings?
Did he ever throw a shoe at you?
No.
Okay. No, did you ever throw a shoe? Actually,
I did not. Okay. I wouldn't.
Joe
do that.
And John have come to the fork in the road.
When I started Sports 1985, we got 5.5 minutes on the 6 o'clock sportscast newscast. When I left in 06, my last newscast, as a sportscaster, I had 2:15, and the break before me was 3:30. And then if Lisa and or Davis happened to go over because they were told to go over, then it could cut into my time. So I'm not quite over it yet.
Not at all.
I have not let that go, but it is. Hey, when you sit at the very end of the desk, at the very end of the newscast, it is what it is. So, yeah, I'm still bitter. life lesson, fork in the road. I want two things. One, you became a dad later in life,
yes.
Right? And what a neat, but I remember, you were, I don't know how old you were when you had her. But
45.
You got her. Yeah, wow. Right? Yeah, so that, I mean. What a wonderful thing. That's a fork for you. You could have said, no, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, it was a fork. And I remember thinking that, God, when she goes to school and we go to pick her up, they're going to think I'm her grandfather. But it was okay. Actually, there were a lot more older parents than I thought. And the younger ones, well, they might have thought it. They just didn't say it. I mean, they were pretty nice.
Well, I just want to lift Davis back up again as to how nice he just spoke to John, and will not call him out at all on things. You're just your temperament, your delivery. It comes through on the television. Everybody loves you. And back to your weather, maybe a few questions about Middle Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Global warming. Mm-hmm. Just a quick answer. Every bad storm, every bad season, every hurricane, it's that global warming. Mm-hmm. Yes, the environment is heating up. Is this a trend? Is it just a cycle?
I think it is a trend. And I said a little while ago, if you're a meteorologist, you need to have an answer to everything. But then you also have to remember, what is your area of expertise? And my area of expertise is generally forecasting and also severe weather. And the guys that really do study the climate change things are, that's a whole different ball of wax. But for example, I was at an American Meteorological Society conference about 10 years ago, and the guy he was the president of the AMS at the time, but his regular job was he was in charge of the Climatic Data Center in Asheville, North Carolina, which is where they store all the records, just weather records in general. But and they don't exactly do forecasting from there, okay? But he sat down and he came to this thing where it was just broadcasters. And this man put his arms on the table, and he had these big eyebrows, and he looked at us and he said, if you don't think that the earth is warming because of man's influence, you are absolutely wrong. And this man was dead serious, and he's one of the most educated people on earth. And I hate to say it, but his name is slipping my mind because I'm getting
Al
old.
Gore, I believe.
No, it wasn't Al Gore. And so I don't want to say I just take his word for it. Now, we all... it's not answering the question whether it's a cycle or man-made or not, but
sure.
I talked to all the old-timers. You remember Bobby Green used to be in the studio. He's passed away now, but all the old guys that used to work in it, when we actually had a studio crew and it wasn't a robotic camera, and they all grew up in the 50s and 60s, and they said, man, it was colder back then, and it snowed so much more than it does now. Now, that's just one lifetime, and we're looking at an Earth that's, pretty older than that. And cycles or at least extension of weather much longer than that. But as far as you're asking about Middle Tennessee, all the old timers will tell you that it used to snow a whole lot more in the 50s and 60s than it does now. I don't have the exact number. I have to pull out my phone and look it up. But if you take the weather records from when they began in Nashville at Fort Nashboro in 1847, I believe, up to the current time, and you looked at what the average snowfall was, and then you look at it for over the last 30 to 50 years, it's a little more than half of what it was. If you take the whole record and then you just take the last 30 to 50 years, it's gone down to, it's a little more than half now.
And a little bit of that too, don't you think, is the ozone is depleting and that is allowing things to warm up. So that is an actual cautious tone that we can't keep burning and doing all the things we possibly can to to deplete that ozone.
This is just a technicality.
No more cow farting.
The ozone. No, the ozone is just a little technicality here. It's CO2 that we're talking about here.
Right.
The ozone is what shields us from ultraviolet light. And when that ozone hole was getting smaller, it was a matter of getting more skin cancer and cancer from ultraviolet light. It's carbon dioxide. Those are two separate things. Carbon dioxide is what's, and not just carbon dioxide, but other greenhouse gases are what is, the factor in global warming.
Okay, I have to get this in quickly, and we'll keep it short. But you talk about forks in the road, May 1st and 2nd, 2010. I asked Lisa Patton about this years later. because I know it's a sensitive subject, but the Great Flood. Mm-hmm. And my recollection is nobody called that. And right. And I know what she told me at the time, and she was, what's your explanation for why that was just mm-hmm. a weird event, and really nobody.
Well, I find that most large floods, I mean, if you look back at it and you look at that, the fact that there was a flash flood watching effect, you look back at the fact that the Weather Prediction Center had put out, like, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 inches of rain type thing, which is a lot. Okay. It was somewhat called for, but 17 and a half, you know what, I don't think any major flood has ever actually been called for, but what Lisa probably told you, and I would tell you, is we as the meteorologist on TV, were distracted more by the tornado watches and warnings. That's probably what she told you. We were so focused on the tornado watches and warnings, and then suddenly we see the Bell Road thing going on Saturday. And that was one thing. That was a flash flood. And then it just kept on going around Middle Tennessee to where by Sunday, you were downtown at the Cumberland River, I remember distinctly.
Wow.
You were live. He's live right there at the
Yeah, we were right park. At Riverfront with the pole that had the, mm-hmm. who knew, right? What a great visual to have.
And I believe you talked up. To one of the store owners there who was sandbagging in front on First Avenue. Yeah.
Well, the first interview was with Dayton, Ohio bachelorettes, because we didn't know how. I still to this day was embarrassed. And then Mayor Dean came, and things got really, really mm-hmm. serious. Okay, I know you're tight on time. We're gonna move on, and I'm gonna hit this.
Oh my gosh!
I can't read because I don't have my readers on. Shut up.
Jeez.
Whatever.
You gotta wear shades.
Future is bright, Davis.
We talked about the consulting mm-hmm. gig, probably 42 years in Nashville television. You really could probably do what you want right now. What does the future hold for Davis Nolan?
It's a good question because I'm going to be 70 on May 3rd.
Wow.
And whoa.
You look great.
Well,
you're holding up, dog. Yeah.
No, John looks the same as he did when I last saw him, but I'm like 40
more.
Pounds heavier and way grayer. But what does the future hold? Here's the problem. Okay, I should retire, and I should at least slow down. And I'd like to maybe at least, you know, not work 5 days a week. But suddenly, I have a news director who appreciates everything I do. And I go to work, and if I do weather, he likes the way I do weather. I go out and do stories. He likes the way I do the stories. He helps me find stories. He loves, you know, nature and outdoor stuff and animals. And he'll find these stories. Davis, here's a good one for you, you know. And I go out and do it. And he loves it. And it's hard to quit when
you're finally appreciated.
Now, right. If tomorrow we change management again, I'm out of here, man.
You're done. Do you want to teach?
Teach? Well, I one time I thought about that, but at this age, nah. But when I was younger, I thought it wouldn't have been bad.
Just an emeritus part-time guy. You know, you could walk in, everybody's going to know who you are.
I wouldn't mind being a guest speaker at science classes.
Hey, there you go.
And, you know, like a meteorology class and stuff like that. I wouldn't mind being a guest speaker for something like that or, you know, helping out a teacher to some extent. But if you really want to be a meteorology teacher, you're teaching the calculus and the physics and all. Because I tell people that my father sang a song, I joined the Navy to see the world. What did I see? I see the sea. I went to meteorology school to learn about weather. What did I learn? Calculus. All they wanted you to do was at Florida State was to learn what's in the computer models, which were the future when I was there in the 70s.
That's right.
And they wanted you to know what's in it. And to this day, I don't care whether you go to Oklahoma, Florida State, Wisconsin, you know, Western Kentucky, UT Martin, where we have meteorology departments, you have to take fluid dynamics, thermodynamics, and all that, and you learn the equations of motion and also thermodynamics that are in those computer models that we have to use to try to help forecast every day. And they're not perfect, but that is not only the future, but it's been the present for 20 years or more now.
The passion that you have had for your career and your expertise, but Joe, I'm impressed with your restraint because you are a weather geek. Being
he's a pilot,
FlexJet captain. And not having to know all that kind of nimbulous, cumulus stuff.
Nimbulous? Nice.
Well, there are cumulonimbulus.
Let's just gang up on him, Davis.
I mean, you are a weather nerd, and you've got a legend here.
I know. He's tremendous.
And you've done it yourself on TV at RFD and Channel 5. And you probably could have done it past that if you wanted to.
I started to go into that, and then you started to look in the mirror again and say, let's move on.
That's so
but,
true. But,
Davis, you actually, you know, I did, so I worked in radio, rock radio for 24 years. But during that time, I started flying, and I fell in love with weather because when you make, as a pilot, you make your own forecast. We use basically the same charts, the same information, and then you go fly in it. It's different to be standing in a studio and say thunderstorms coming up, but unforecast weather takes on a whole different meaning when you're in it. So I loved it. And I met you on the set as we talked pre-show here with John, when John would invite me over and we would, you know, do stuff there. And you were very, I told you, I said it. I said, Davis, I'd like to be, you know, the weatherman. That's what it was called back then. Mm-hmm. And you said you ought to do it. It's, you know, hard work and you could study. And I did it distance through Penn State and Mississippi State and got my broadcast meteorology certificate.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. And so I did serve time at RFD TV in weather and News Channel 5 when Bree had her baby. She was out for a couple months and I did that. And it was your words of encouragement that made me do it, really. Because in those days, pre-internet and such, you know, people were not negative, but they're like, yeah, sure, kid, you're 35, start now. You know, I've been doing it since 19, blah, blah. And so I did it. So I really appreciate your, you never know how you can influence people with your kind words. And you did that to me, and I love it. And it's helped me be a better pilot, because obviously I'm in the weather all the time.
Yeah.
But we both have that same burn of, here's your situation, and you need to know everything that's in that box. So whatever comes at you, you can.
I'm impressed you did the Mississippi State and Penn State thing, because it wasn't easy. And luckily, those things, programs came along, because I knew a lot of people that were thrust into weather, doing weather, that didn't have a background in it, and they wanted to be able to have a background in it. And Mississippi State was, I believe, the first to come along with it. And then a lot of the other universities started helping out, too, with having these courses to where you could, you know, nowadays, everybody on the air has got a good weather background.
That's
correct. And you were in broadcasting already, so what's the difference? I mean, so it was radio, TV, what's the difference?
That's what I enjoy.
So you're getting the background in weather, you know, that made you qualified, you know, and, you know, you could actually get the National Weather Association's seal, I believe.
Correct.
With what you have.
The NWS.
You know what made me, what also helped you is when I got out of TV, and that's a, you know, not by my own choosing, sir, you know, but you still are going. I was able to donate my tie collection to Joe. Joe had the best damn ties.
All the hand-me-downs.
Right? Well, hundreds or dozens, right?
Top-of-the-line ties. They're the best ties I've ever had.
And so is my contribution. But, I just want you to know that.
The weather community, you guys know it is competitive, but, you know, Dan Thomas was another guy who encouraged me at Channel 4, but I interned at Channel 4 in 1985, and that was Bill Hall. Mm-hmm. And let's go back to probably one of the best-known weather guys in the world, but
and
there
nicest
was no
person you'll ever know.
Nicest person, but there was no seal on that guy. There was not the level that you would.
Yeah.
He would never get hired at a station now.
Mississippi State didn't have those things that they have now, and even 25 years ago. But he went to Western Kentucky and took some courses up at Western Kentucky and learned as much as he could about weather. So I admired Bill for doing that, because he was a broadcaster that was thrown into weather, and he was serious about it. So, you know, he literally drove up to Bowling Green, and before Western Kentucky had a full meteorology degree, the geography department had a degree in, I believe they called it, it was a geography degree with an emphasis on climatology and weather. And so they had some meteorology courses. It wasn't the calculus courses, that kind of thing, but it was, you know, to get a good knowledge about meteorology and weather. And Bill actually went up to Bowling Green and took these courses to get as much as he could. And if Mississippi State had their thing back then, I'm sure he would have done that.
And again, you're just too nice. Davis, you wax them all. You know, you're the most informed guy. And just the quick final touch, 2011, you came off the air. You had chemotherapy and a bone marrow transplant. We're talking about you going to PT. Talk about that era and where you sit now. You feeling good? Well, things working well?
Yeah, I was very lucky to be born in the age that I was in, because it's multiple myeloma. If you look at the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's literature, you'll see it mentioned. It's a blood cell cancer that is very similar to leukemia and lymphoma. And it's a different spike, because one of these protein spikes, you know, you get the doctors to explain all that to you. But I'm lucky that some of the therapies that they have for it now. And by the way, the physical therapy I'm going for now is a shoulder. I had a shoulder surgery, nothing to do with the cancer. And that was back in 2010, 2011. So I was able to go through the chemo that was required with that, and then the stem cell transplant, which was it wasn't a donor, it was my own stem cells. And it's technically not gone. They clean you up. okay? And I've gone 11 years. Now, finally, the numbers were undetectable. They're finally detectable, but not to a level that they want to do work. But since then, they've come up with an antibody, and now they got this one of these CAR T cell things that you've heard about. I was just seeing my doctor the other day, and he was telling me, so, well, now the antibody, that's still there, but we got the new CAR T thing's going to be approved soon, and if you ever do any more work with that, you know, we'll probably do that instead, and because that's even better. But we got both of those, and, you know, the previous doctor I'd had told me because of these new things that were coming in, that I would probably live another 30 years, and I was 58 at the time when he told me this, I'd probably live another 30 years, and I would not die from the cancer. I'd probably die if I didn't lose weight from a heart attack or a stroke.
Well, you're doing great. You're a living legend. You're reliable. You're beloved. Your run is, we just don't see that anymore, and you do it with such grace. You're just inherently a likable person. From the moment I met you, you treated me, I'm an outsider, and so forth. And, well, congratulations, and I know you're going to keep it going. And you've got one less blessing, I believe, right?
Well, Davis, we definitely bestow upon you. May God bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and give you peace. Because your best stories in leadership, I think, are still ahead. You know, you talked about it's kind of a new era where everybody digs what you're doing. You know, I think that's going to keep unfolding in front of you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Good stuff.
Thanks for being on the Second Cup of Joe.
And John!
It's the Second Cup of Joe. And John, as their guests expound on any and all topics within the realm of decency. Want to be a sponsor? Let a TV and radio guy help build your business. Email the show, secondcupofjoeandjohn@gmail.com. Now, hold on tight and grab another Second Cup of Joe and John.